Hello, everybody. While we're waiting for Annie Clark to take to the microphone in New York City, we're here in Washington, D.C. Everybody in the chat room, quick reaction to the record. Why don't we do this? Why don't we ask everybody to type in a few words their reaction to the new St. Vincent record, and I will figure out where Annie is. You want to read some of the comments while we wait for Annie?
Yeah, I think a lot of people are saying this is going to be the record of the year. It's very beautiful, unsettling but beautiful. That's one of the things that she does so well in her music is the mixing of the beauty and the darkness. It's very, twisted and dark, but also lovely with lovely melodies and everything.
You there, Annie?
I'm here.
Ah, lovely. You know, it's a difference between one button makes a huge difference.
Oh, I bet. Is that you guys in Washington now?
We are in Washington. Okay. Bob Boylan, and Robin Hilton.
And, hi, guys.
How you doing?
I'm well. I've been listening to you guys for the past couple minutes, and it was like being trapped behind glass. Like, can you hear me?
I used to have to do pledge drives at a member station, and I had to fill 20 minutes by myself one time saying, that's you and one more caller. You and one more caller. But we're so happy that you're here, and we have tons of questions from listeners in the chat room we want to get to.
While I was calling and trying to get the connection, did you read some of the quick reacts that we get?
Yeah, we asked people just an immediate reaction. People wrote hourly. How do you say that?
Orally?
Sound delicious.
Orally delicious.
Orally delicious. Twisted, throwback, dirty, original, schizophrenic, unsettling, beautiful.
You reacted to schizophrenic. You like that one.
Oh, you know. Sure.
Yes. is it a scary moment? And we're going to take questions and read questions from people who just spent time listening. Is it that scary moment, that one moment when people first hear your new stuff for you? Does it matter anymore? Or is it your child and you've let them go already?
You know, it's funny the way that how you turn in a record. I mean, this record's been done to me since the late April, and so it's fine. It's like waiting for Christmas or something. I've been living in this music and with this music for a while now, so it's exciting to get to for it to actually hit other people's ears.
And that reaction for you, does it make a difference to what you wind up doing with the songs on live, or how does it filter?
Well, I think for me, because I do a lot of the conception in the studio, I think that the songs really on record are just the starting point. Mm-hmm. And they'll grow and get lived in and get, dirt on the floor and dust on the windowsills, once you really take them out live.
And we're going to go to our first question, but you got a tour coming up with this record, which begins?
That begins October 2nd in Minneapolis.
Coming to a town near you and a town near us, I think in November at the 9:30 Club.
But that's right.
We'll talk more about that. Robin?
Annie, you mentioned that these songs were just the starting point. I'm sort of aggregating everybody's questions here. A bunch of people asked how these songs come together for you. Do they just start off as simple melodies and then you get into the studio and completely deconstruct them? Maybe you could just tell us a little bit about the creative process and how these come together.
Sure. I went out to Seattle and to a place where I really don't know anybody, and a lovely guy and friend of mine, Jason McGarrett from a band called Death Cab for Cutie, just let me have his studio for the month. And so I just went out there and plugged away 10 to 12 hours a day. And I've been referring to it as a loneliness experiment because I didn't know anybody in Seattle. And, you're kind of like starved for human attention when you're just like striking up conversations with, like bank tellers and just like anybody who would listen. So, but yeah, I went out there and just wrote songs in a really simple way, guitar and voice, made sure everything had an emotional nucleus, if you will. And sent my ideas to John, and then we got in the studio in February, and, John Congleton, who produced this record, is my dear friend, and a great, great collaborator who I feel really lucky to know and to work with. And we put the songs through the meat grinder at that point.
Did you, what did you send him? Were they acoustic guitar renditions? Were they a little, you know, through a 4 or 8 digital tracks? Or
They were modest. They were modest 2-track recordings, guitar, voice, simple. No accoutrement, nothing, no ornate arrangements.
And that's different than what you've done before. Yeah.
That's very different from what I've done before. I mean, I've been lucky enough to be very technologically inclined, I guess, but also had the opportunity to work with technology from the time I was very young. So I, with the help of my stepdad, who was kind of a computer geek, helped me build a little digital recording studio when I was 15 on a PC system called Cakewalk Audio. That's,
Oh, yeah,
I think some people still use it. And so if I, my process has always been one of layering and kind of DIY texture, et cetera, et cetera. And with this, I mean, I was kind of at a loss, to be honest.
You mean like, sitting by yourself and alone with just a one instrument?
With a guitar and not, you know, and not allowing myself to get lost in textures and layers first thing, because that's kind of my, my go-to. It was kind of scary. I had moments of really being like, oh, I am not into this. Do people do this?
Would you do it again?
Yeah, I mean, I think I would. I think I would do it again. I think I saw the Alexander McQueen exhibit, Savage Beauty, here at the Met, and it was strewn with quotes from him. And what the thing that resonated the most with me about it was he just kept saying, it showed up in a few of the quotes. You know, I spent years learning how to perfectly construct something so that I could deconstruct it. And for me, you know, on the last record I did, Actor, I started from a place of deconstruction. There was no construction beforehand. and so with this, you know, I started from a place of construction. You know, I had a song, and then, you know, once you have something with a core and a narrative, the arrangement part becomes easy, becomes intuitive. It's written into the DNA of the song almost.
I'm going to ask Robin to ask more questions, because I could go on, but
we have so many, and
oh,
we're not going to get to all of these. Of course, we'll get to as many as we can. But we're talking about your sound and how you arrive at it, and a number. We don't have to geek out too much here or be gearheads, but a number of people asked how you get that great gritty guitar sound.
Well, I think first and foremost, you kind of have to throw your whole body into the notes. I remember there's a song on the record called Northern Lights, which you just heard, and I take a guitar solo in that, and I remember being in the studio and playing it, and just realizing like, oh my God, I'm really glad that John is in the other room, or he's not seeing me play this right now, because I look like a freak, like a robot freak, just flailing. So there's that. If I may be a gearhead, I play a 1967 Harmony Bobcat with a really fantastic vibrato bar. And there's a Brooklyn company called Death by Audio, and I use their Interstellar Overdriver Supreme. And then through like a Silverface Princeton.
I'm taking notes.
Yeah, and then
what
and
to
then,
buy.
Yeah, this is the signal chain, if you must know. Let's see. And then John's got a Neve console. I'm spacing on the specs of it, but you know, I think there was probably a ribbon mic on the amplifier. So you're getting a mixture of this pedal, which is like an enormously ratty and sort of you know, bratty, if you will, and then amp overdrive sound.
And I was that throw yourself into a thing was the first thing that surprised me when I saw you first perform, and it makes a huge difference.
It kind of does. I'm not sure what, you know, technically the difference is, but I sound better when I look worse. So.
I think there's something about getting sloppy, especially for people who are perfectionists, that it just brings you into a slightly different world than you're comfortable with, and then things happen.
Yeah, so. And it's enormously physical too. I think more as I've gotten older or grown or whatever, I just realize how much of all of it is physical, from the guitar playing to obviously the singing. And
let's go to another question.
You were also talking about the creative process and how you weren't sure whether or not you liked this new approach. A listener named Amy writes, do you ever feel blocked creatively while writing your music? And if so, how do you overcome it?
Well, people talk about writer's block, and in my experience, writer's block is not necessarily that simply nothing is coming out. Writer's block tends to be more that things are coming out, but your subjective reality is very negative about what's coming out.
And
you're judging it, and you're going, "Oh, this is nothing," and you know, this is worthless, and you know, going down any kind of shame spiral. But
how many times have you gone back to a sketch you may have written that you threw away and said, "Oh, that's pretty cool."
That's
sort of what you're saying. I never really thought of it the way you just explained it, but that's
good. I mean, I think the thing to remember is that in some instances you have no idea how it sounds.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you have intuition, but sometimes you are not the person with the grasp on reality, and so just allow for that to be possible, and try not to be too hard on yourself and judge it too harshly.
Well, such a great way of putting that. A lot of other listeners have asked, what artists inspire you? What have you been listening to, or what were you listening to that perhaps informed your sound on this record or your past ones?
Well, I was not able to listen to a lot of music while I was in the studio writing this record, because obviously, you know, you're John, who, again, I can't say enough good things about. I just adore him personally and musically, but you know, he's a real workhorse, and I guess so am I, and we would be in there for 10 to 12 14 hours a day for 6 weeks straight, you know, rarely taking any days off. So at the end of the day, you know, the most you can kind of stomach to listen to is NPR. You know, like that's you know, that's, you don't want to hear music, you want to hear
someone
Terry
talking.
Gross, yeah. So the one thing that I kind of could go back to and listen to was Janet Jackson's Rhythm Nation. I know it sounds kind of strange, but
I actually love that.
I love that record.
Great video too. Videos too.
I love it. I love it. It has a real spot in my heart. And then we were listening to Scott Walker, and I'm just thinking of things that we would put on in the car to go take a lunch break to.
Now, Scott Walker's not a light listen, Janet, as Janet Jackson might be a palate cleanser or something.
Right. Yeah. Well, we weren't putting on The Drift. I mean,
okay.
It wasn't, we weren't sort of going to get a tuna burger listening to The Drift. That's too much. It's too intense. But, you know, I think Scott Walker 4 was in the car quite a bit. And Grinderman, Nick Cave, just such a phenomenal writer.
He's one that his music works through his movement and his body contortion, and he's very, very physical, and I think that's how he gets a lot of his character.
Oh, absolutely.
So, let's see. Robin's trying to tell me something, but I have no idea.
We were just talking.
I lost my idea.
Bob and I were talking while the record was playing, and you mentioned how much this reminds you of Yes, and we started pulling up some stuff. Are you a Yes fan, Annie?
I've had definite moments with Yes, for sure.
Let me pull this up. I bet there's actually a generation of people who don't really know Yes. So let's do this.
They just know that Owner of a Lonely Heart was playing at the fairground in 94.
I just want people to listen to this. I'll just play it just for a moment. It's something in the guitar and the phrasing.
So awesome. That's so awesome.
So maybe you'll do a cover of Close to the Edge when you come to Washington.
I'll work on that, yeah.
But Steve Howe is a guitar player there. Ooh, wait a second. And that totally has... I never understand in some places whether it is an influence that finds its way to you as the artist or whether it's just in the artist for them to reach for this place. And two people, independent of one another, came to a similar place. For you, first of all, I guess there is some sort of connection for you and Yes, but mm-hmm. but do you see that at times with artists and is your connection with that sort of guitar phrasing, which is sometimes it's mean, but sometimes it's precision, which I hear in your music and I hear in Steve Howe's guitar playing. Is that something you feel influenced by or just came to because that's you?
I think it's impossible to really extract or quantify how much is, you know, everything you've ever heard coming through you, and then how much is, just a unique expression of you-ness, if you will. Uh-huh. I think it's hard to quantify.
Yeah, it's nature nurture.
Yeah.
Robin.
Can I ask, can I get heavy here?
Yeah. Oh,
no. So this is a question.
I told you not to go for this moment.
I thought we were really impressed with all the questions that were coming in from listeners. Oh. Just so thoughtful. And here's one from Kelly who writes that she's read discussions of your music in which people seem alarmed by your creativity, something I feel like I've rarely seen in reviews of a male artist, and it frustrates me. Do you have any words of wisdom regarding the expectations people seem to have of a female artist?
Well, that's a very good question. Thank you, Kelly.
Yeah.
I think that I've recently come to that I have often been asked something that isn't actually a question, and it's a statement, and the statement is, you're a woman.
Thanks for noticing.
Yeah, and then they want you to explain that. You know, it's a strange thing, and I think the main thing is you can't kind of don't let them put that on you. Like if it's startling to someone that, you know, a woman should be a good guitar player or something, that's really not on you.
Yeah,
that's on them. And in that vein, I mean, the idea of female instrumentalist and virtuosity that's not a new thing. I mean, look at classical music where you've got, you know, tremendous amount of females.
In 15 minutes, Hilary Hahn is going to be upstairs playing a violin at my desk.
Exactly.
There you go. So,
you know what? Yeah. Period. You know, that's all it is. Does it frustrate me? Well, I don't necessarily. I'm kind of like pushing for a post gender thing. I think I'm just kind of impatient. I thought we were kind of like past it, but you know, there's a lot of really wonderful women who've gone before and really laid the groundwork for me to be able to say, yeah, aren't we post gender yet? You know, so mm-hmm. so it's a process, but. I don't let it get me down, and that's on them. You know, if the subtle sexism of lowered expectation, that's on them. That's not on me.
Yeah. Kevin writes, we can get back to something more tangible maybe with this. Kevin writes, do you get involved with the design of the artwork for your records, like the physical packaging? How involved with you?
And describe the packaging. Yeah. Might be helpful.
Sure. Well, the album is called Strange Mercy, and the cover is ostensibly someone being suffocated by white latex. Excuse me. so it's like a mouth, you know, searching for air. Kind of like before when you guys couldn't hear me.
Yes. Right. We were definitely grasping for air.
Yeah, that was a meta moment.
Do you remember Vacuform? It was like a toy that, anyway.
That sounds like a horrifying toy.
Yeah, that is. It's like a a dry cleaning bag
for an infant. Yeah.
But for little kids.
Great for kids.
Anyway, we're bored for you. So, how did you come to the image? And I think, was it you? I think is what he's asking your involvement.
I don't know. Maybe Mystery Mouth. No, I was actually really inspired. I'm a big fan of Can, the krautrock band Can. And I was particularly inspired by a record cover they have for a record called Out of Reach. I was kind of riffing. I was just riffing on Can.
Mm-hmm. Which is it was kind of a hand grasping at plasticky something, or coming out of a piece of a wall or something, right?
Yeah.
Latex or something.
Yeah, it might be a very similar. I should probably not reveal my inspiration as a ripoff. Yeah.
Hey, there's a 40th anniversary collection of Can coming out, by the way.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, with live stuff and all that. I think it comes in a few months.
Awesome.
I'm laughing because so many of the questions are, can you be any more awesome? And I was going to throw that to you, I'm not going to.
Thank you so much. That's awesome. That's really awesome.
Helen writes that often when artists move through new albums and their music evolves, they seem to distance themselves from their previous work. How connected do you feel to Actor and Marry Me after making Strange Mercy? And will you still be playing a lot of those songs live?
I will be playing. I will be playing bits from Actor and bits from Marry Me Live. They'll be reinvented because my new live setup is a different configuration. I think it's like anything. You know, the more time that's passed from it, the less I necessarily feel connected in the same way. But I find new ways to, be emotionally invested in the work, and I'm still proud of the work and like it, and also realize that that those songs from Marry Me and Actor, to varying degrees, have entwined with people's lives, and people want to hear that. I mean, it's always kind of like, you know, you get a new toy, there's a new record. I want to play the new record, but I definitely recognize the importance of the other stuff.
First time we met, you were in a warehouse with a band, a little tiny cubicle with teaching your band. It was just before South by Southwest. Was it 2009, maybe?
2009, that's right.
And I was wondering how you, with this record, how you approach your musicians. Are some of them the same? Do you give them the record and say, here, listen, and then we'll get together? Or do you just come in a room with them and present it? How do you go about doing that?
Well, I have this idea that, and maybe I've been reading too much Ray Kurzweil, but I have this idea that through, like, immense technology, there is... you come out the other side to emotional freedom, to creative freedom.
Uh-huh.
And how that has manifested in this particular musical incarnation is I have like a Star Wars pedal board now that's like MIDI controlled, and it's connected to Ableton Live. And I have a great new keyboard player who's running Ableton Live and then sending MIDI commands to my pedal board to change my pedals on cue, because what was happening in previous live incarnations was I've always had, you know, a pretty intense pedal board, And also being, you know, the main guitar player and then the front person, I was constantly kind of distracted by, oh, wait, I've got to hit this pedal at the chorus where, you know, and, you know, missing cues.
And who thinks with their feet? I mean, like,
right,
that
right. You know, it was, in half of rehearsal would be spent, like, just tap dancing, basically. So I've removed that element from it, and I have a lot more control over parameters.
You have a lot of trust.
I have a lot of trust. Yes, I am trusting technology. But the end result for me is that I just get to be a front person and a performer. I just get to sing and play guitar, and that's it. And I'm not sort of worried about also being a live programmer. Mm-hmm. So that's probably the geekier answer than what you really wanted. But
Walking into a room, do you walk into the room and the band knows some of the songs already, or do they, or you how? Let's just do that.
I have a lovely group of people I'm playing with. Matt Johnson on drums, and Daniel Mitseris, the keyboard player who I mentioned, who's also running Ableton Live, and then this great girl Toko Yasuda on Mini Moog. So she's ostensibly the bass player. Uh-huh. I just sent them the record and said, you know, this is the key for live or whatever, and let's. So you're starting from a place of everybody kind of knowing where you're going, and then it can just grow from there.
Excellent.
What do you want to just take a few more questions here from listeners?
And quickly while we're doing that, I'd be curious, first reaction for people, favorite song right off the bat. Just like, what's the one that just came out and grabbed you? So if you just do that in the chat room, just type, and I'm just curious to see that kind of list. And I will pass it along.
You know, I immediately thought Cheerleader, and then I looked at the question I was going to ask, which was from Laura, who writes, there's lots of references to school on the new record. And what significant does that time period hold for you?
Well, let me think about that. I'm trying to think what the references to school are on the record.
Somebody just sent me a poster to a film, The Frighteners, which was another one of those sort of vacuum-formed faces. It says, dead yet.
Do you not hear the references that Laura's talking about?
Oh, I'm just, you know what? I'm just spacing on them. Because I really want to answer her question in a really...
Well, there must not have been a real specific thing that you were intentionally doing about that period in your life, or do you often think back about, you know, when you were in school and that finds its way into your music?
You know, I think the truth is I have in some ways a very, very good memory, but in other ways a very, like, there are entire periods of my life that just seem incredibly hazy. I mean, not, you know, from a... Not from like a, you know, a
not
drug
in drug
haze
induced haze
necessarily,
right?
Yes. You know, but so no, I don't. I actually, my high school reunion, my 10-year high school reunion was this past weekend.
Did you go?
No, I didn't go. I mean, I couldn't go. I had work, I guess my memory would be jogged had I gone to my.
Did you play music when you were in high school? Did you have a band or any of that stuff?
I did. I played bass in a metal cover band in junior high school.
Of course.
I did, yeah. Maiden, Pantera. I'm sorry, that's Iron Maiden.
Wow.
For those of you not in the know. Sorry, I didn't mean to use that insider talk. And then...
B.O.C. I'm sorry, Blue Oyster Cult.
Yeah, I love it when people just call people by their first names. Let's see. Oh, who else? Metallica, Megadeth. Oh dear.
Well, you get great guitar noise from those.
Yeah, great guitar players. Great guitar players in all those bands. And I mean, I grew up in suburban Dallas, and I was actually reminiscing about the first time that I walked into a guitar store at age 12, and it just you know, it's that age where you've outgrown toy stores. You're like, no, I don't play with dolls anymore or whatever.
Yeah.
But it was like I was walking into a new toy store. It was a whole new level of excitement.
And just because I'm older, I'll just say that you'll continue to enjoy that toy store for a long time to come,
I still do. Yeah.
Bob needs in like another 50 years or so. Just a couple more quick questions. I actually got quite a few questions about your name. Was there a religious figure that inspired the St. Vincent name, I guess, you know, for people who are still just discovering your music?
Sure. The name is a reference. I took it from a Nick Cave song, where it's off a record called The Abattoir Blues, and it's a song called "There She Goes, My Beautiful World," and it's a wonderful song. I mean, it's a wonderful song. But he has a line in it where he says, "And Dylan Thomas died drunk at St. Vincent's Hospital." Sorry, he sings it like hospital. I don't say hospital. But
it's all natural.
Yeah.
So pretentious.
Camera. That really resonated with me, and I'm a Dylan Thomas fan as well. Yeah. And also aware that that's where Bob Dylan took his... There's a lot of cultural references in there. They're all dovetailing in there somewhere.
One last question from a listener. This one comes from John, who wants to know if there were any songs you left off the album that could appear on future records. And do you have many unfinished songs when you're working on a record?
Send us a bonus track.
We do. Yeah, there are three or four more songs that got, completely recorded, and good stuff that I really liked. It just didn't work, on this record. It was just too much of a meal or something. It was bordering on ear fatigue. So, those songs will get out there somewhere.
Or is it that like your other records, you hit 11 tracks and that's when you had to stop? Someone else wrote, was it intentional that your records all have 11 tracks?
Oh, maybe that's a really auspicious number. I don't know. Does Marry Me have 11 songs on it?
I believe so. Let's see. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
let me tell you what you have on your record.
I'm sorry. Well,
perhaps we should keep the interview going till 1:11, but yeah, no. Hillary Hahn upstairs, I think we're going to run. This has been great. Thanks so much for spending time with us. And thanks for the chat room. A beautiful chat room, I might add.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
Civil and wonderful. Great questions.
Thank you guys so much for the questions. I wish I could stay here all day and answer all of them.
Yeah, I was wondering, because sometimes this is the part of the... And you're very good at this and genuine at this, but I always sometimes wonder when an artist has the press day or week or whatever it might be, what you do when you go home after... being asked, as gracious as anyone can be, being asked a lot of questions is exhausting. So what are you going to do? You're going to go like sit in a corner, smoke a cigarette and have a tequila?
Just something single malt. I don't know. I think I have more interviews after this, but this has been delightful.
Thanks.
So I'm not even worried. This didn't feel like an interview. This just felt like a chat.
Great.
Thank you so much.
Maybe we'll see you when you come to DC. Be well.
All right, take care, guys. Thanks very much.
Bye-bye. Thanks, everybody. We'll go out on just a tiny bit of music, and it's been fun. I'm Bob Boylan. The whole first listen for the St. Vincent record is available at npr.org/music, and lots of other first listens are there as well, and that usually every Monday. We have some surprises coming up. Can we mention the one that we... We mentioned the one coming up next week. Yeah, we have a Wilco listening party coming up, so stay tuned for that. From NPR Music, I'm Bob Boylan. It's All Songs Considered.